मोकम करोति वाचालम पंगुम लंघयते गिरिम यत्कृपातहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणम परमानंद माधवम श्री चैतन्य ईश्वरम. ओके सो वेलकम एवरीवन फॉर टुडे सेशन. सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 5 एंड टुडे वी आर गोइंग टू टेक अप टेक्स्ट 18. सो टिल नाउ व्हाट हैज हैपेंड टिल नाउ द ग्रेट सेज दुर्वासा मुनि offending Ambarish Maharaj is running all around in the entire universe, going to Brahmaloka, Kailasa, and not getting help anywhere. And when it was recommended by Vishnu himself, Narayan himself, then finally he comes to Ambarish Maharaj. And as soon as he comes to Ambarish Maharaj, the first thing that he does is pays obeisance to Ambarish Maharaj. He holds the feet of Ambarish Maharaj. And Ambarish Maharaj, looking at the pitiable state of Durvasa Muni, he starts offering prayers to Sudarshan Chakra, which was ready to kill Durvasa Muni for the offense that he had committed. And then, after offering the prayers, after the good deal that Ambarish Maharaj did at the end, saying, if I have ever done any devotional service to Lord Krishna, please spare this Brahmana. So having said this, and Sudarshan Chakra just leaves that place. And Durvasa Muni was ecstatic. I'm saved, I'm saved, I'm saved. And then Durvasa Muni, with so much of gratitude in his heart, he starts offering prayers to, or starts glorifying Ambarish Maharaj. And various prayers that he has offered are very, very beautiful, and we discussed until now. And till yesterday, we have discussed about the glorification of Ambarish Maharaj. So where Durvasa Muni is so nicely glorifying, saying, you're such a great devotee. And devotees like you are purified just by hearing the holy name of the Lord. Then what to talk about anything else that is impossible for you? And then in the yesterday's class, we saw that he gave the title to Ambarish Maharaj. Durvasa Muni gave a title to Ambarish Maharaj. What was that? Ati Karuna Atmana. Ati Karuna Atmana. And then we also spoke that how devotees are Ati Karuna Atmana. So today we move on to text 18 and we'll try to discuss from this text onwards. So I think we will be able to complete this in next two sessions. There are 28 shlokas and we are at 18th shloka. So 10 shlokas are there. Let's see what speed we can go with. So here, okay, we can chant the shloka. Text 18, Canto 9, Chapter 5, Text 18. Everyone. Rajatam akritaharaha.
Rajatam akritaharaha.
Pratyagamana kankshaya.
Pratyagamana kankshaya.
Charanau upasangraya.
Charanau upasangraya.
Sorry, it's not sangraya, it's upasangriya. चरणाव उपसंग्रिय प्रसाद्य समभोजयत् So translation, expecting the return of Durvasa Muni, the king had not taken his food. I'll tell you how much time it took, and it will come in the future verse. Anyways, you people know how much time it took for Durvasa Muni to go for a tour, universe tour, universe darshan, and when he came back, it was a long time. Till then, king was sustaining only on water. Therefore, when the sage returned, the king fell at his lotus feet, pleasing him in all respects and fed him sumptuously. Now, this is the height of, it's like someone comes and slaps you and then you're falling at his feet and saying, thank you very much. Please come to my house for dinner today. That is the case here. This is what we are seeing. Durvasa Muni was about to kill Ambarish Maharaj. And look at this, what Ambarish Maharaj is doing. Ambarish Maharaj is falling at the lotus feet of Durvasa Muni and then offering all respects to him without having any grudge in the heart, without having any pride in the heart. He's offering all respects to Durvasa Muni and then he fed him sumptuously. The prasadam that was made, so that he fed him sumptuously. Now here we understand that our position doesn't matter, no, what we are. In fact, here Ambarish Maharaj is just considering that Durvasa Muni is a Brahmana and I am a Kshatriya. So Kshatriyas are always lower than Brahmanas. And I'm a Grahastha. And Durvasa Muni is a renunciant. So I have to pay obeisance to Durvasa Muni. I have to pay obeisance to Durvasa Muni. With that mood, he's not thinking, oh, look at my fame, look at my glory. Sudarshan himself came to save me. And then finally this Durvasa, he learnt his lessons. And now he offered me prayers. Aha, such great personality I am. And then after hearing all this glorification, he didn't shoo away Durvasa. He's saying, now go away from here. He pleased Durvasa Muni through his behavior. That's what in the next shloka Durvasa Muni is saying. Let's go to the next shloka. Next two shlokas is talks about, you know, how what Durvasa Muni felt. Text 19. Thus the king respectfully received Durvasa Muni, who after eating varieties of palatable food was so satisfied that with great affection he requested the king to eat also, saying, please take your meal. All this natak happened just for one, what should I say? Maybe half glass of water which Amrish Maharaj might have drunk. Just for that half glass of water, this Durvasa Muni, he ran all around. And now just think, this person is running so much. How much hungry this person will be? The person who sustains on Durva grass, so it's called as Durvasa. Now he has been fed with nice palatable food. It's like you do nice Ekadashi without eating anything, just on water, or even not without water. Next day, it will be a celebration. Even if it's a simple pongal and chutney, you'll enjoy a lot, right? So that was the case of Durvasa Muni. And also when it comes to Amrish Maharaj, look at the thing. Amrish Maharaj is first feeding Durvasa Muni. He's waiting for Durvasa Muni to complete his prasad, honoring prasad. And he's waiting. And after Durvasa Muni is done, now he's requesting Amrish Maharaj, please take your meal. This is very difficult to comprehend, that how do Vaishnavas behave? What qualities do Vaishnavas have? This is very difficult to comprehend. And here we see very easily that how this Amrish Maharaj, he should have taken offense, but he's not taking offense. Not just that. He has forgiven Durvasa Muni. Along with forgiveness, what he has done, he has forgotten also what Durvasa Muni did. And then forgiving and forgetting, now he's serving. Next level. This next level. We all can forgive, but we cannot forget. Still, if we are really great souls, Mahatmas, maybe we can forgive and forget. But serving will keep a safe distance from that person. We'll never go to serve that person. But here, Amrish Maharaj is setting a different level altogether. He's setting a different threshold altogether for devotees, where he's forgiving, he's forgetting, and he's going to serve also. And this is how even an enemy's heart can be converted, and even he can be made a devotee. This is what is seen in the lives of great devotees in the entire history of Srimad Bhagavatam and even in the contemporary history also when it comes to Srila Prabhupada. Where people are coming to harm them, but they are giving mercy. And what mercy they are giving? They are giving the highest mercy of reaching Krishna, attaining Krishna. This is called as the glories, or this can be called as the glorious devotees association, which is very, very rare. Very, very rare. Right? So let's see in text 20 what Durvasa Muni has to say after eating. After eating sumptuously, after having lots of burps, now Durvasa Muni is going to speak. let's hear from Durvasa Muni what he wants to say. Durvasa Muni said, I'm very pleased with you, my dear king. At first, I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality. But later, I could understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet and talking with you, I have been pleased and have become obliged to you. Such an amazing verse. Purport. It is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyana Bhujai. Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure Vaishnava. Therefore, although Durvasa Muni was a great mystic yogi, he first mistook Maharaj Amrish for an ordinary human being and wanted to punish him. Such is the mistaken observation of a Vaishnava. When Durvasa Muni was persecuted by Sudarshan Chakra, however, his intelligence developed. Therefore, the word Atma Medasa is used to indicate that by his personal experience, he would understand how great a Vaishnava the king was. When Durvasa Muni was chased by Sudarshan Chakra, he wanted to take shelter of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and he was even able to go to spiritual world to meet Supreme Personality of Godhead and talk with him face to face, yet he was unable to be rescued from the attack of Sudarshan Chakra. Thus, he could understand the influence of a Vaishnava by personal experience. Durvasa Muni was certainly a great devotee, great yogi and a very learned Brahmana. But despite his being a real yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore, it is said, Vaishnavaira Kriya Mudra Vigena Bhujai, even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. There is always a possibility for so-called jnanis and yogis to be mistaken while studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. Now, lots of things are there that can be discussed. So let's highlight a few points here. So one thing is saying that Pritosmi Anugrihitosmi. Pritosmi Anugrihitosmi. So basically this says Pritha. Pritha means I'm very much satisfied with you, O Amrish. And Asmi. I am. And there's one more word which is there. Asmi also. Asmi also means now, at present tense. That is not mentioned here. So, asmi also means present tense. Now I've understood, like that. So, now he's saying that anugrahitosmi. So, you have showered your mercy. And now, in the present moment, now I've understood that how great you are. So, basically, this verse goes on to say, now Durvasa Muni is confessing that I didn't knew who you were. You're such a great personality. Such a great personality, you're such a great devotee of Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, or Lord Krishna. Such a great devotee. And now, after getting the experience, I've understood. That's what he says. So, there are four categories of people. Okay. So, the first category, or the highest category, or the first level of first class personality, or first class person is the one who hears and understands. Like, a person hears that I shouldn't drink alcohol, and then he's like, I'll not drink alcohol, never. He decides. Next category of person is the second category, level 2. So now level 2 category is the person will hear, and then the person would like to see and then believe. So like the person might see, oh, drinking is bad. I'm seeing my father. He drinks. And I'm seeing what all things is going through. I will never drink in my life. This is the next level. So he needs to hear. And then he needs praman also. Pratyaksh praman. He wants to see. The third category, which which most of the Kali Yuga people belong to, is they will hear and they'll have a doubt. Is it possible like this? And then they would see. Like, okay, maybe it happens in his life. If it happens in my life, I'll see. And then, only when they experience, then they'll believe. Then they'll believe, Sai Bola. Drinking is bad. And how did they experience after drinking when he had liver cirrhosis? Then, okay, drinking is bad. Health gets affected. So, that is the third category of people. And the fourth category is that person has heard, the person has seen, the person has experienced, and still he feels, theek hai, it's okay. Maybe drinking more, the liver might get cured. That is the fourth category. Means even after hearing, seeing, and experiencing, the person will never learn. That's the fourth category, donkey category, that is. Yes. Animal category. Now, see, currently if you see, everyone talks about good experience. I want to have a good experience in my life. And even when it comes to different malls and different shops, everyone wants to give good experience to the customers. Yes. And even when it comes to the corporate also, they want to give very good experience to their employees. Why? Because now the category which everyone belongs to is third category. So since we all belong to third category, third class people, we all belong to that category, third class people. So third class people means what? We need experience, and then only we will believe. Like for example, when Bhagavatam says about different aspects, like for example, we are not the body, we are spirit soul. So at that time, so there are people, and also, you know, when you say that there's Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Bhagwan. So there are people who would hear and no believe. So I'm very fortunate to have all of y'all who belong to this category, you know, who have heard and who have believed that yes, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna is there and He's Supreme. The second category of people are, ठीक है भगवान को दिखाओ फिर हम मानेंगे. Show me God, then I'll believe. Show me God, then I'll believe. And this dialogue is very nice. Show me God. They say this dialogue, show me God, as if, you know, God is some servant in someone's house. So, you know, a person is asking me, show me God. Then I'll say, Ramo, aajao. this is what these people feel, as if God is servant in someone's house, and just by clapping, that person will come. And even if God comes in front of them, you know, what they will be able to see? They will be able to see? In fact, in Vrindavan, there are places where, you know, continuous Nitya Leela happens even now. Nitya Leela means even now Krishna is doing various pastimes. So there have been places where people wanted to experience. Yeah, I know different names. People wanted to experience. So they tried going there at that particular place at a particular time of the day or night. And then next day morning, either they were found dead, or they were found blind, or they were found mad. These eyes are not meant to comprehend the effulgence of Krishna, which is equivalent to 10,000 or more Koti Surya Sama. He's called as Koti Surya Sama. Now Koti Surya means 1 crore suns together. When it comes in front of us, what will happen? Can you imagine what will happen? The effulgence that is coming, that will burn someone's eyes and burns one's existence also. So people want to take experience. I want to get that experience, then I'll believe God. If you get that experience, you'll die. You'll not believe in God. Because you're not qualified to experience. In Brahma Samhita, Brahma is saying, who can see God and who can experience God? He says, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santas Sadaivaradayesho Vilokayanti Yam Shama Sundaram Achintya Gunaswarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Brahma is saying, who can see? The one who has applied the ointment of love of God on the eyes. Anjana. Prema Anjana. Love of God. The ointment of love of God. Basically, it means the person who has attained Krishna, or the person who has qualified, become fully purified, removing all the contamination, coming to the platform of constantly remembering the Lord, constantly chanting His holy names, and constantly having His darshan. That personality can actually experience Krishna. And Krishna does leelas with them, such great personalities. And such great personalities will not reveal that they can see Krishna and they can do various things. When it was asked to Srila Prabhupada, one hippie was drunk, he was completely intoxicated. And then in between the class, just imagine the class is going on, and one of you texts in the chat box saying, Prabhu, can you show me God? So now this will be very, still it's Zoom, okay? Still it will be very offensive. But here, there is a class going on, live class, where people are sitting, Prabhupada is on the Vyasasana, and one hippie gets up in the class, he was sitting in the front, he gets up in the class and he's asking Srila Prabhupada, can you see God? Prabhupada is very, very witty. You know what Prabhupada said? You sit down, you're coming in between. You sit down. And many times it was asked to Srila Prabhupada, can you see Krishna? And Prabhupada would give some ambiguous answers. But we all very well know through Prabhupada's various pastimes. Once Srila Prabhupada was in the middle of the night, he started jumping in ecstasy. And he was wearing a nice, beautiful flower garland. And he was singing and dancing and jumping. His servant came and then he started looking, why is Srila Prabhupada jumping like this in ecstasy at middle of the night? This was in a foreign country. And the garland, what sort of garland he's wearing? These flowers are not found anywhere in the entire country. This is a different flower altogether and so fragrant. The entire room was fragrant. Then the next, that same day, that particular night he went, to hold Srila Prabhupada and ask, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, tell me what happened. And Prabhupada is like jumping and raising his hands and going around in the entire room and dancing. Then that disciple, he understood, there's no use. My Gurudev will not answer now. Let me ask tomorrow. So he went to sleep, and next day morning, Prabhupada gave the Bhagavatam class. 8 o'clock Bhagavatam class is gone. Then at the end of the class, this devotee, he went to Srila Prabhupada. And he asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, yesterday you were jumping in ecstasy. I was trying to catch you, but you're so ecstatic that I couldn't catch you. And the garland that you're wearing, you know, that those flowers are not found anywhere. Who gave you this garland? So Prabhupada looked into the eyes of that disciple, you know, since he was very close to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada looked into the eyes of the disciple and he said, Krishna came yesterday and he gave me this garland. Many times this has happened where Lord has come and he has given darshan. In fact, Lord is always there, you know, Srila Prabhupada. When Prabhupada would write the purports, you know, after writing his own book, he will tell the disciples, please recite from this so-and-so book. And Prabhupada would relish. Prabhupada would say, oh, that's an amazing point. And the disciples would say, Prabhupada, you have only written. And Prabhupada would say, no, I have not written. This is dictated directly by Krishna. Krishna has written this. This is what he would say. This is called as experiencing God. But now when it comes to us, when it comes to neophyte devotees, or when it comes to materialist, we cannot experience God now. Our experience can be, we are chanting and there are transformations in our heart. That is our experience of Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes. But experiencing God face to face, having darshan of the Lord and having Lord in the dreams or whatever, those are of the next level. That will come. With time, that will come and we'll get purified. That will come. No doubt about that. But currently, you know, we are so very enamored by this term experience, that everything we want to experience, at the start only we want to experience. Person is holding the beads and then he's chanting and then he's asking question. But when will I experience Krishna? It will take time. It will take time. First purify yourself. Yes, first follow the procedure that is given. And to follow the procedure, you should have faith on what you have heard. Correct? So it is said that the first class understanding is by hearing. We shouldn't go for the experience. That's third class understanding. So when we are hearing, so at that time we should have complete faith, because we are hearing from a bona fide person and from a bona fide scripture. And when we hear and accept that particular thing, whatever is spoken, then very fast we progress on the path of bhakti. But if we want to explore ourselves, experience ourselves and things like that, our progress will be delayed for many lifetimes, right? So initially, whatever analysis is supposed to be done, it should be done as quickly as possible. And then immediately hold on to the feet of the devotee whom you have faith in, and hear from that devotee very carefully and execute that as soon as that is heard. That is called as the first class understanding. And that is what is glorified throughout Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Right? Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, but Arjuna didn't say that, give me experience of it. You're saying all this, but what about it? And even when Arjuna is asking, show me Vishwarup, so Arjuna was not interested to experience. And Arjuna wanted to set some criteria for those people who say that I'm God. So in future, when someone says God, so Arjuna's thought process was this. In future, if someone says God, so at that time, we'll ask them to show Vishwarup. And if he's able to show Vishwarup, then we'll accept him as God. But unfortunately, nowadays, people don't read Bhagavad Gita, so they don't know how to test the new gods in the market. So in this way, we see that experience, people want to experience things. That is a third class understanding. So we should somehow or the other, we should elevate ourselves and come to the first class understanding just by hearing from bona fide authority and bona fide scripture, not hearing anything and everything. These two things are very, very important. And here we see that after experiencing Durvasa Muni, understood what was the actual qualification of Ambarish Maharaj. Then Durvasa Muni says, I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied by what? He makes wonderful points. He says, I'm satisfied by your darshana. First thing he says, by your darshana, I'm satisfied. Second, he says, by your sparsha. Sparsha? When did Durvasa Muni touch him? After slogging all around, when he came to Ambarish Maharaj, so at that time he fell at his feet and caught hold of his feet. That touching he's talking about. And then he's saying, Atithyena. Atityena basically means having prasadam. Because he was hungry, so he had prasadam. So by doing these three things, he was completely satisfied. Darshana, sparsha, and having prasadam. Darshan of a devotee is very, very purifying. Very, very purifying. As soon as we take darshan of a devotee who is wearing tilak, kanti, and dhoti kurta, or sari, or whatever. Yes, and if that devotee is pure, just by taking darshan of that devotee, now the person becomes blissful. That is called as darshan of a devotee. And the second aspect, he's talking about sparsha. So when we serve a devotee, now from our heart and soul, when we serve a devotee with complete dedication and faith. So at that time, what happens is, by the mercy of that devotee, there will be a different bliss that will actually pop up in our heart even without our notice. That is called a satisfaction within the heart. Because by the mercy of that devotee, since he is pleased, he can give us Krishna. That is what one of the devotees, he's making this prayer to Vaishnavas. He's saying that Krishna se tumara Krishna dete paro tumara shakti ache. He's saying that Krishna is yours. And you can give me Krishna. You have the shakti, you have the power to give me Krishna. And who am I? Ami to kangal, Krishna Krishna boli dhai tava pache pache. I'm a beggar. I don't have any qualification. Only thing that I can do is just run behind you and just serve you. And I beg at your lotus feet, Krishna is yours. Please give me Krishna. And when the devotee is satisfied, they will bless. That's how Narad Muni became Narad Muni. Narad Muni in his previous life, he was the son of a maidservant. And then there were some personalities who came in to their house. They were called as Bhagwats. Means devotees had come to his place. And he, being the son of a maidservant, he was serving them very nicely. Very, very young boy. 5 years old or something. And by the mercy of these great souls, Narad Muni, in that maidservant son's body, Narad Muni got the mercy. And he became a great devotee. And after leaving the body, he became Narad Muni. So you can imagine what is the mercy factor here. And that all happens by serving a devotee, serving a nice devotee. That's what he's saying. Now after taking your darshan, now after sparsha of your body, and then finally makes one more point, atithya. Atithya talks about having prasadam. So it is seen that when a devotee takes prasadam, since that prasadam is not different than Krishna, just imagine that food is touched the mouth of Krishna. You can imagine what is the power of that. So it is called as spiritually sanctified food. Now just imagine such nectarian, spiritualized substance, you put it in your mouth, what will happen? There will be a bomb spot inside. Anathas will burst. Anathas will be killed. Right? So prasadam has got so much of importance. In fact, it is said just by having prasadam every single day, a person can easily become a very nice devotee. Right? I'm sure you might have heard this either from me or from other devotees in various sessions that you have attended. That whenever a person cooks, the consciousness gets mixed in that food. And the food that we are cooking, even if it's vegetarian, it is filled with karma. Right? Because lots of living entities have been killed. Because the plants are killed and there are many microorganisms, those are killed and so on and so forth. So lots of sins are there. Lots of karma is there when cooking happens. So there are five types of sins that comes while cooking also. It is described. I don't remember exactly the five types. The names of the five types, but there are five types. So now just imagine what happens is when you offer this food to Krishna, Krishna makes it karma free. The first thing. Second, since he's accepting that, it becomes prasada. Prasada means mercy. So that is in the form of mercy. And that mercy, when you accept, when you honor that mercy, so by honoring that mercy, a person can easily advance in bhakti. So everything that we put in our mouth, that has to be prasad. That's very, very important. In fact, there have been cases in ISKCON. So our leaders have attended many, many religious conferences. So religious conference means many personalities will come from all around the world. Many great spiritual personalities from different background. And then there'll be one representative from ISKCON also. Yes. And then there'll be huge chaos. Whenever these religious conferences happen, there's always a huge chaos because everyone is giving different philosophies. And some philosophies are bogus completely. So there'll be huge chaos always. So once, you know, when one of our senior leaders, when he went for such a conference, so the with him, he took you know, his servant and lots of prasad he took with him. Then everyone spoke, and now this devotee's turn was there. He spoke, and when he was speaking, he actually made sure that before he speaks, that everyone has prasadam plate in their hands. So everyone, you know, had a nice prasadam, and then the, you know, they honored the prasadam, and then this devotee started speaking. And this devotee very intelligently, he cut every single argument of every single personality who presented. And, you know, for everyone's surprise, no one spoke anything. Everyone just agreed. And that particular meeting peacefully got over. This is the power of prasadam. In fact, we have seen even in the houses of some devotees where the members in the family are not devotees. But the lady is a devotee in the house, and she, with a lot of devotion in the heart, she cooks for Krishna every single day. And that prasad she is offering to everyone in the house. Without the notice of the family members, they become devotees. In fact, this is seen that anyone who has prasad unknowingly also, since it's mercy, that person gets sukriti, spiritual credits, for sure he'll become devotee one or the other time. So many, many Westerners, especially, and even in India also nowadays, people are scared to accept prasadam from ISKCON devotees. There was one case where husband and wife, they were walking on the street, and then one of our volunteers offered prasadam. So husband, you know, he went ahead to take prasadam, and then the wife said, no, no, don't take. These people, they give something and suddenly something happens, and you start doing bhakti. You'll start doing Krishna bhakti, which is very dangerous. So please don't take. And then the husband was so convinced with the wife, he didn't take. God should bless every husband, you know, with such a wife to go to hell for sure. Yes. So in this way, we see that prasadam has got so much of importance, right? So all of us, you know, should make an endeavor that whatever we cook without onion garlic, we should offer it to Krishna, and then we should have. And you'll see when this samskara is given to the kids. One of my mentor, you know, his brother, this was in the childhood. I guess his brother was in first standard or something. So whatever was given to his brother, so first thing that he would do is take it, go to the altar, and then first he would offer it to the altar, even biscuits also, saying, oh Krishna, plus first you take. When you take, then it becomes prasad, then only I can have. And then after offering, and then he'll offer, then he'll chant the prasadam prayers, Mahaprasade Govinde, then he'll, you know, then he'll accept. This is called a samskar that the parents have to give to the kids. Because when you offer, you know, bhoga to Krishna and prasad is there, and then when everyone is sitting to honor, when you offer prasadam prayers, automatically the child understands, oh, this is not normal food, what people have outside. This is something great. Automatically that wonderful feeling comes in the heart of the child. And even when the child will go out of the house for his professional courses or something, he'll still make sure that never ever he'll take up something abominable, be it alcohol or meat. This is what is seen in the devotee families. Their kids, they are so pious. Even when they go to colleges, they don't touch alcohol. They don't touch any untouchable thing. They aspire, then they hanker for prasadam. This is called a samskara. So all the parents who really want their kids to grow very nicely, they should feed prasad to them. And it's described in Shastra that anyone who has prasadam, since it's a spiritually sanctified food, when it is put in the mouth, Krishna does the job. Krishna does the job of cleanup inside. And also, you know, since it's a sattvic food, that actually nourishes the brain tissues, brain cells. And when brain cells are nourished, so at that time the person becomes, you know, very, very sharp. Very, very sharp. With respect to various aspects. And he has a lot of clarity in life, what next to do. So in this way we see that when we have sattvic food, you know, that is offered to Krishna, which is called as prasadam, automatically, even without the person's notice, lot of devotional qualities will come. And that's what we see here. Having prasadam and having lots of experience here, Durvasa Muni is completely changed personality. To such an extent that he's glorifying Amrish Maharaj. He's telling Amrish Maharaj, actually, I couldn't make out who you were. Now I'm understanding who you are. You're such an exalted personality. Initially, when I came to your place, you received me with so much of respect. And then you through your hospitality, You won my heart and then you invited me for prasad. At that time, I accepted your hospitality, not understanding how great you are. Now I'm understanding how great you are. This is another lesson for all of us. You know, one thing, when it comes to devotees, they are chuparustam. They are always hidden. You can never make out who is a devotee, who is a pure devotee, never. In fact, devotees, they'll always be in the, you know, they'll always take up a very, very humble position, very, very humble position. Yes. And in that humble position, you'll never understand what is the level of this devotee. Sometimes people ask that, you know, can you please connect me to some realized soul? Actually, there are many realized souls around us, but never ever they'll reveal that they're realized souls. And just, and also, not only this, there are people who can become devotees later, right? Like all of us, we all were materialists, right? Now we have become devotees. Now we have started chanting. So someday we were materialists, now we have become devotees. So that also goes on to say that people around us who are acting as materialists, someday they will get mercy of some devotee and they will for sure become devotees in the future. Oh Krishna, this is very dangerous. Let me tell you why. Currently, we are thinking we have become devotees and we're ill-treating people around, right? We feel, oh, I've become so great. I'm devotee of Krishna. And then we start offending people around through our so-called purity. We start offending people. No, you don't know this. You don't know that. I know. I'm doing it. And we're so proud about whatever little we are doing. And you see, initially when we start practicing bhakti, this is the anartha that creeps in. The pride creeps in. Already so many anarthas are there. And by practicing bhakti, another anartha comes into picture. That is called as bhakti anartha, pride. That creeps in and the person starts feeling, oh, I'm a great devotee. And then he starts instructing people around and he's so proud that he starts undermining the status of people around. Materialist I'm talking about. He starts ill-treating people. He starts feeling, these people are meat eaters. These people are this, these people are that. He drinks alcohol always. You know, he's such a person. They are always, you know, talking nonsense. They're talking about movies. They're talking about cricket. You know, we speak as if, you know, we have been bathed very nicely, right from our childhood with milk. You know, we say, in Hindi, doodh ka dhula hua. Yes. Wearing white clothes doesn't mean that we are pure. Right. We were impure. Now, by the mercy of devotees, slowly we're getting purified. Right. So now when we're getting slowly purified, so that also goes on to say that person who's a materialist, maybe he can become a devotee one day. Now just imagine. Now Amrish Maharaj was there in a garb of a king, okay, a kshatriya. And then Durvasa Muni is coming there. Now Durvasa Muni is a very great sage. Now he's looking at Amrish Maharaj. And the first judgment that Durvasa Muni is giving, he's a king. He's a kshatriya and I'm a brahmana. So, okay. Thinking this, he took that offense saying, how can you drink water? And not just he took the offense, he tried killing Amrish Maharaj, he tried murdering Amrish Maharaj. And then later he understands how great Amrish Maharaj is. Now Amrish Maharaj, you know, being such a nice devotee, he forgave. Now just imagine in our life, currently, we might be fighting with some people, we might be chastising some people and so on and so forth. Just imagine in future, if they take up to bhakti and they become pure devotees, do you think Krishna will spare us for the offense that we have done some 20 years back? Krishna will remember. He will not forgive us. So our passport or our ticket for Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna would take and he'll tear it and he'll throw it. Yes. So again, we'll fall down in our bhakti. So we should be very, very careful. Be it devotees or be it non-devotees, we treat them very nicely. Yes. But when it comes to setting the principles of bhakti, we don't compromise. We don't compromise on that. But when it comes to treating everyone, we treat very nicely. Be it a Mayavadi also, we treat them nicely. There have been cases where you have seen Prabhupada, heard Prabhupada, that how Prabhupada would chastise Mayavadis. In his lectures, you see how he speaks. And then how nicely he would chastise scientists also. He would say, these fools, rascals, they don't know this, they don't know that. And when these people would come in front of Prabhupada would treat them so nicely. So nicely. Not that Prabhupada was duplicit in his nature. Prabhupada, when it comes to setting the principles of bhakti, he would be heavy. But when it comes to humanity, he would be very, very soft. When it comes to principle of bhakti, he'll be like a thunderbolt. And when it comes to humanity, showing the humanity qualities or humanitarian qualities, he would be like soft like a rose, soft like a butter. And that's how, you know, it is seen in the life of Srila Prabhupada. There were Mayavadis who got converted, you know, to become devotees just by, you know, association of Srila Prabhupada. Why? Because Prabhupada would treat everyone like that. You can imagine these hippies becoming devotees. Now, if suppose Prabhupada would have thought, ah, these are all gone, case of drug addicts and drunkards, and you know, you know, suppose just Prabhupada would have done this, how these people would have become devotees? Prabhupada gave them so much of love, even when they were not qualified. Now, they were gone cases, still he gave so much of love to all of them. In fact, Prabhupada, he would personally serve prasadam to all these materialistic people, all these hippies, drunkards, drug addicts. He would serve prasadam to everyone, and all these people, uncultured, they would come, have prasadam, and they would leave all their plates down, litter all the prasadam here and then, and they just go. And this old man, aging 70, this personality, he would pick up plates from his own hands and he would clean the entire place. This is the thing that Prabhupada would do, you know, for the materialist. Can you imagine how much importance Prabhupada would give? Right? This is what we learn from the Acharya, that how to deal with people around. Our spouse might not be a devotee. Our in-laws might not be devotees. Our friends might not be devotees. Our parents might not be devotees. It's okay. We give them a lot of love and affection. Only when it comes to principles of bhakti, when they break principles of bhakti, we are heavy. Or, you know, when they break principles, we are still okay. But when they hinder our progress on the path of bhakti, we are a bit heavy. But when it comes to giving love, you know, we give immense love. We give immense love. And that's what transforms a person's heart. Not the philosophy. Sometimes we feel we can convert a person into a devotee by giving nice philosophy. No. It's only the love and affection that we shower on the person converts that person to a devotee. And this is what we see here. This is what we see here. That how Durvasa Muni, he mistook Amrish Maharaj to be an ordinary king. Ordinary king. But here he turns out to be a great devotee. You never know, a person might be in pant shirt, not wearing kanti. Now this kanti is 3 lines, so you are able to see it as a necklace. But suppose I wear it as 2 lines. There are many devotees who wear it as 2 lines when they go to office, not to show to people. So suppose it's 2 lines, so it will come down, it will go inside the shirt. Now just imagine, you offend such a person. Gone. We are gone out of bhakti. So just by offending a devotee, a person ruins his own devotional service. And here we see that Durvasa Muni offended Amrish Maharaj, but Amrish Maharaj wanted to shower mercy on Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni was saved. But when it comes to us, we never know. No, we never know that a person has got offended. Here Durvasa Muni went and he begged forgiveness. But we might never know that he's a devotee. There's what to talk about going and begging forgiveness. Right? So one thing that is seen in all the great devotees, that they never offend anyone. No living entity they offend. What to talk about human beings? They don't even offend cats and dogs and mosquitoes also. So now don't ask me this question that, Prabhu, can we kill mosquitoes? This is a frequently asked question. So the point is this, that we have to respect each and everyone, because it is very clearly mentioned, this line which says, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyana Bhujai. A Vaishnava's Kriya and Mudra, I mean his behavior, is very difficult to understand. Externally, we might not be able to make out also if he's a devotee. So it is said, so this is one, that we don't know if he's a devotee. Second is that sometimes we know that person is a devotee, but his behavior might be crazy. And we might start thinking, I'm better than that devotee. But then just imagine why the devotee is behaving crazy. Like, I'll give you an example. Prahlad Maharaj, most of the time, Prahlad Maharaj would be in ecstasy. Okay. He will be just closing his eyes and then, he'll be meditating on something. And suddenly you start jumping in ecstasy, start laughing and things like that. Now, a person who laughs without any reason, you know what we call him as. Crazy. Mad. And yet Prahlad Maharaj would close his eyes and, you know, this would happen. Actually, what would happen is Prahlad Maharaj, when he used to get into his deep trance of meditation, he would enter the Leela of Krishna. And there he's seeing Krishna, yes, stealing butter. And Prahlad Maharaj is watching as a gopa. And then a gopi is coming from behind, and now Prahlad Maharaj is watching that Krishna would be caught red-handed, and Krishna is telling Prahlad Maharaj, don't tell anything. And Prahlad Maharaj, looking at this, he starts laughing, going in ecstasy. Now just imagine, we are standing there, okay, and we know Prahlad is a devotee. And then suddenly he started laughing, suddenly he started crying. So we will maybe give a judgment saying, I he's a nice devotee, but I think he needs some treatment in mental asylum. So this is called as, it's very difficult to understand the kriya and mudra, I mean the actions of a devotee. Yes. So what we have to do, our goal is to serve devotees. We are not here to judge anyone, right? We are not here, you know, holding some gadget. He's first class devotee. And then you see, like there was some game, right? Some game where you have to catch some creatures, Pokemon. Some game was there where they would go with the mobile phone like this and they would catch whatever. Yes. So, you know, we shouldn't go around with a gadget, you know, of our filthy mind saying, let me see, oh, this devotee is, you know, he has come after me. He is his junior to me. This devotee is okay, but still these are the points that he should improve on. That devotee is okay, but not, he's not matching my level and so on and so on. No, it doesn't work like this. It doesn't work like this. When we come to devotee association, only thing that we do is we are in service mode. How can I serve you? How can I serve you? You're so dear to Krishna. You're chanting every day. Anyone who chants every day is a very, very dear personality to Krishna. Where is the question of judging a person? Right? In fact, there's a nice poem written by one of the Prabhupada disciples. So he writes a poem that he's visualizing that he's going back to Godhead, to Goloka Vrindavan. Okay. And then he writes in that poem that when I entered the doors of Goloka, I saw that personality. I was surprised to see that personality sitting very close to Krishna, whom I never thought will be able to attain Krishna. Then I saw that watchman was guarding the temple, who was really chaotic and cribbing for every small thing. He was serving Krishna personally. And I was surprised to see all of them. And guess what? When all of them looked at me, they were surprised how I came to Goloka. So basically this means that we are judging people and then trying to understand, oh, this person is not really realized. This person has come after me. In fact, there are people who might start bhakti late, but they might be progressing even much more faster than us, because we don't know in the past life where they have left their bhakti, correct? Very clearly Krishna says, you know, second chapter 41st shloka, Neha Bikrama Nashosti Pratyavayo Na Vidyate Swalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Prayato Mahato Bhayat. So he says that whatever bhakti you have done, that will never be destroyed. And in sixth chapter, continuation to this, he says that wherever the devotee leaves his bhakti, from there he'll start. Okay. Now, in the past life, a devotee might be left his bhakti maybe at, say, 16 rounds or 32 rounds or whatever. And now you have started chanting. You have come to bhakti first in this life and you start chanting 4 rounds. Now a new person has come. Now the same personality from past life. Now this personality has just started chanting and then you are thinking, he has come after me. And it is seen with no time, the person comes to his original position, what he was there in the past life. And from there he starts continuing from, you know, that particular point. So without, you know, without our notice, that person will come to that 16 rounds or whatever. And then we'll see this person is progressing very fast, very fast. But initially, what did we do? Initially, we judged them. Initially, we are judged saying, he's a new devotee. Right. So the point that I'm making is, we shouldn't do the mistake that Durvasa Muni did. The mistake of judging a devotee. We shouldn't do that. Very, very important. And when this judging is there in the mind, still it's okay. But whatever you think, that automatically comes to the tongue. Manasa becomes vacha. And when you start speaking ill about devotees, Krishna cannot tolerate. You saw this, what happened here. Durvasa Muni, when he offended Amrish Maharaj, through his vacha and then through his action, kriya, Krishna couldn't tolerate. He said his Sudarshan Chakra. In our life, the Sudarshan Chakra will come and cut off us from the path of bhakti. We'll be out. So we should be very careful. Very careful. This is called as Vaishnava Aparad. So we should be careful of Vaishnava Aparad. You know, committing offense against a Vaishnav, not just Vaishnav, even committing offense even to people around us. And when we do that, then we actually become devotee, because we are well-wisher of everyone. We are not chastising anyone or we are judging anyone. Right? So this is called as becoming a Vaishnav. This is called as becoming a devotee. Now don't chastise me saying, Prabhuji, in the first class you said you have to chant only one round to become devotee. Now every class you're giving us high parameters. High parameters. Actually, the thing is, just by chanting, all these qualities will come. All these qualities will come automatically. We need not artificially do things. Obviously, we have to take care of the situations. But we need not no artificial think or ye karna hai, wo karna hai. No, automatically it will come. When we start hankering to attain Krishna, automatically these qualities will manifest. Automatically we'll start saying, no, I shouldn't offend anyone because Krishna doesn't like this. I shouldn't eat this because Krishna doesn't like this. Does not like this. Then I shouldn't do this particular activity because Krishna does not like this. Our entire thought process will change. First question that we will ask by doing any activity is, will this please Krishna? If I speak this particular thing, will this please Krishna? If I do this particular activity, will this please Krishna? If I eat this, will this please Krishna? This will be the question that will come. And then when this question comes, then we should understand, yes, now we are progressing. Yes, now we are getting mercy of the Lord. And then automatically we'll be able to decide. Automatically, because we know what Krishna likes and what he doesn't like. So in this way we see that what mistake Durvasa did as Vaishnavas, we shouldn't do. So with this, I would like to stop here. I thought we'll cover the next shloka also, but next shloka is also very important. So we'll take it on Sunday. So tomorrow is Saturday. So we'll take it on Sunday. So the, what do you call it as notice? No, not notice. Kya bolte? Announcement. Some announcements. So tomorrow we are starting with your Bhakti Vrikshas. So I request all of you all to attend the respective Bhakti Vrikshas conducted by your respective Bhakti Vriksha leader. So please attend. And the next one is tomorrow. Yeah, the Bhakti Vriksha timing is 5:30 to 7. And tomorrow at 7 o'clock, you know, we have invited His Grace Amrendra Prabhu to give class. So he's going to give class in YouTube. So you'll get the link very soon. So you can you know, see that class. So Amrendra Prabhu is my first mentor. I'm very, very much indebted to him. And you will see. You will see how great he is when it comes to his speech. And when it comes to the Krishna Prema or the devotion that he has in his heart. So please attend the class. So that will be very nice. You know, very nice. And he's just, we are of the same age. So he's also just 28, 27 or 28. And you see, you know, what devotion he has in his heart. So please attend the class. And please don't miss the first Bhakti Vriksha session. Please don't miss the first Bhakti Vriksha session. Okay, let me go to the questions. Please pose the questions if you have. In a non-moving objects, do spirit soul present? No, in non-moving objects, spirit soul is not present. Because as soon as a soul enters, or non-moving, yes, non-moving, and if they're alive, like trees, the trees are sthavara. It means they are they cannot move. So soul is there in them. Soul is there. That is the reason they have consciousness. So they're growing. As soon as the soul enters the body comes into, the body becomes life. Then the body starts growing. Like for example, when the male and female come together, when they unite and with the mood of begetting a child, so at that time, with the semen of the male, the soul enters. And then there is a clubbing of ovum and semen. That is egg and semen. And then now the first thing that is formed is the zygote, the small structure. And since the soul is present, now it starts growing. Now the entire, that small zygote or small substance which looks like a ball, that starts growing into a body. And after 9 months, it becomes a very nice grown-up body, where when it comes out, then we can see hands, legs, and etc. etc. And we call that structure as baby. Yes. So yes, non-moving objects also have spirit soul. Since living entity is subjected to material world, what to understand exploiting? So basically, exploiting is what? Exploiting is we want to enjoy. That is the mood of enjoyment is exploitative mood. That's what is the point. Whenever we say exploitative, so that means mood of enjoying. I want to enjoy this. I want to enjoy that. That desire. See, we are there under the clutches of Maya in this material world. But the desire that is there, that only we can have desire. And when we get that desire, Lord will sanction, Paramatma will sanction. And then, you know, all this Maya Shakti. So Maya Shakti will start doing various aspects. She will start moving our hand and she'll start doing various aspects so that we can fulfill that desire. So the desire will actually, through the desire, we'll understand, is it exploitative or is it service attitude? So when we get the desire, I want to enjoy something, so that is called as exploitative. When we want to serve, that is called a service attitude. Hope this answers your question. Let me know if it does not answer. Okay, what Prabhuji, share your first experience when you met Amrinder. Oh, that was very horrible. I mean, it was a good experience, but then my behavior was horrible. Now, I belong to a very inquisitive category. And I came from the Shaivite background, worshipper of Lord Shiva, staunch worshipper of Lord Shiva. And then I got his number, Amrindpo's number, from my friend. He was going to his classes. Then I went. Then he told me one day that if you have some doubts, you can call this person. And then I was even now I am a very egoistic person and very proud. So I called him and then I wanted to test his knowledge. And then I started bombarding him with questions, 2 hours continuous over phone. And Prabhuji very humbly, he was answering. Even today, whenever he remembers me, just I think yesterday he gave a class. So in that he spoke about this, that there was one boy, he came to my classes and he was bombarding with questions. And then he actually narrated how I became a devotee. So in I think yesterday's class when he gave on Facebook. So he then, after hearing his answers, I was so satisfied. Because the purity of a person can actually transform our heart. Then I was convinced that, this path of bhakti is very nice. Those 2 hours, what he gave me, that actually transformed my life. Then I started going to Sunday classes, like you all came to the classes that we conducted in PK Sports. So like that, I used to go to his home and then I started attending the class. And the rest is in front of you. Lord saying, Bhagavatam, that pure devotees know nothing. What is that? Just a minute. Pure devotees know nothing apart from him, and even the Lord know nothing apart from his devotee. I think we elaborated a lot on this topic. Where we understand that Lord is so tightly bound in the relationship of love between him and his devotee. So a devotee does not know anything apart from Lord. In fact, he doesn't desire anything apart from Lord and doesn't know also, because he's constantly meditating on the Lord. And when such a devotee, is there, who has surrendered completely to the Lord, so at that time, Lord always meditates on such a devotee. When this question was asked by one devotee to Lord Krishna, so Krishna, that the devotee was asking to Krishna, that whom are you meditating upon? So at that time, Krishna said, I'm actually meditating upon my devotees. I think Narad Muni came and he asked this question. And at that time, Krishna said, I'm meditating on my devotees. Every single day in Dwarka, Krishna would get up at 3:30 before Brahma Murta starts. And he would take bath and sit and he starts meditating. Now, whom was he meditating on? He was meditating on his devotees. So this is called as Lord knows nothing apart from the devotees. And devotees know nothing apart from the Lord. That is the intimate relationship. That's the intimate relationship of that devotees and Lord has. Why is Guru feet and Krishna feet compared to lotus? So they're very soft. So that's the external meaning. So they're very, very soft. So they're compared to lotus. Kunti Maharani is offering this prayer. Kunti Maharani is saying in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, Namo Pankaja Maline, Namo Pankaja Netraya, Namaste Pankajangre. So she's saying that Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, your navel is like lotus. Namo Pankaja Maline, you wear a lotus garland. Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, Namo Pankaja Maline, Namo Pankaja Netraya, your eyes are like lotus. And finally she says, Namaste Pankajangre. Pankajangre basically means the one whose feet are like lotus. So they're very, very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. And same thing applies to Guru's feet also. Since Guru is in touch with Krishna constantly, he also gets that beauty of Krishna. And both Guru and Krishna, they are soft in their behavior. And even when it comes to their lotus feet, they're very soft. The gopis are singing this in the Gopi Geet. So they're saying, Shila Trinankurai Sidati Tinaha Kalilata Manaha Kanta Gachati. So here in this, they're saying that, our heart is pricking, O Krishna. Today, you're going in the forest without footwear. And every time we would see that even when we touch your feet, or any one of us are touching your feet, that actually used to go inside your soul. When they used to touch the soul would go inside and it would create a red mark on the feet just by touching. Even Yashoda Maya would be very fearful to touch Krishna's feet. Because whenever she would touch, the entire feet would become reddish. Entire feet would become reddish. And Mother Yashoda would go crazy looking at that, and she would be very, very careful she would be. Yes. So in this way, we see that it's very, very soft. In fact, when Vasudev, he got Krishna from Mathura, and he kept besides Yashoda, and he left to Mathura. So at that time, Mother Yashoda was in unconscious state. So next day morning when she got up, so at that time, when she opened her eyes, the first thing that she saw, it is described that she saw the lotus feet of Krishna. And at that time, she couldn't make out, what is this that is kept besides me? Is it a bunch of lotuses? And then, no. Then she went ahead. And then she saw something else. And then she saw something else. And she started meditating. Is it a bunch of fruits? Is it the pearl necklace, and so on and so forth. So the beauty of Krishna is so great. It's very difficult to comprehend also. Yes. So one of the things that is very, very close to Krishna's beauty in this material world, you cannot say that exact, beauty is, that comparison is exact. It's a bit close, we can say. So the lotus flower is a bit close in beauty to Krishna in terms of softness, in terms of fragrance, in terms of its looks. So it is called as, Krishna's lotus feet, or Krishna's devotee's lotus feet, or guru's lotus feet. And they're worshipable. They're worshipable. And also the other thing that is coming to my mind is, when it comes to lotus in the dirt, even when they come to this material world, they're untouched. They're untouched by the dirt of this world. Like the lotus flower is untouched by the dirt all around, where it has come into being, right? Come into where it has grown, basically. So like this, there are different reasons why we call it as lotus feet. I hope this answers your question. Oh, a lot of questions. Another question, if either husband or wife is a devotee and if we fight with each other, does it count as apradha? Yes, obviously. Obviously. You are fighting with your spouse, but now your spouse is directly connected to Krishna. And now when you're chastising your spouse, it's like chastising a devotee. Simple. So we see that senior devotees, they don't fight with each other. No. Even if they want to fight, even if they have like very, great anger, still they'll press their lips with the teeth and they'll keep chanting. They'll not fight. So this is one of the things that devotees have to come to the senses, that when husband and wife both are devotees, we should be careful. We should be careful. We shouldn't offend each other. We shouldn't offend each other. Also, stone has life, being a non-moving object. Stone has life means, I didn't get you. Please tell me what it is. Stone has life means what? One session full on your experience with... That will be too much of self-glorification, Prabhu. I'm here to speak Bhagavatam, not my experiences. Maybe personally when we meet, I can share something. Very fortunate to attend Amarendra Prabhu's class tomorrow. I've heard his lecture on YouTube and find him very inspiring. Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. He actually is very kind to me. Whenever I ask him, he agrees immediately. He gives me so much of importance. He considers me as his own. So he accepted the invitation. Lots of important message in this class, Prabhuji. You mentioned Prahlad Maharaj used to see Krishna's pastimes closing his eyes. Prahlad Maharaj were present before Krishna's pastime manifested, not able to comprehend. Okay, what was the message contextual, or does it mean the pastimes are always there and eternal? Our son is running in ecstasy after hearing about... Okay, so when it comes to pastimes of Krishna, I've already told in one of the class, similar question was asked by another devotee. So the pastimes of Krishna are eternal. So in one day of Brahma, Krishna appears once. So in previous yugas, previous days of Brahma, Krishna has appeared. So those pastimes are there, and those pastimes are retained in the Vedic way. That is, it is retained in the form of sound. And these devotees, who are pure devotees, are able to tap that sound. Now, since the age of Kali, we cannot. So Vyasadeva, he tapped that sound and he put that in the form of literature, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and others. So that's how Prahlad Maharaj could know about Krishna. Do stone has living soul inside? No. No. Why will stone have living soul inside? So non-living things will not have soul. Basically, existence of soul means consciousness. So the stone, if the stone starts moving, then we can say that it's living. But or you know, if it starts growing or it shows some symptoms of life, like amoeba. So amoeba, you know, it shows symptoms of life even when it is one-celled animal. Still, you know, it shows symptoms of life. It moves. It it separates, and it, you know, one amoeba forms into two, and so on and so forth, right? So that is called as living. That is called as living. So we can understand that non-living things means soul is not present in that. So there are some stones called as living stones. So that doesn't mean the stone is living. That stone is called as living stone because there are some insects which are able to eat that stone. So that stone is called as living stone. And that stone is very much, and also there's some different sound that is created in the stone. And that stone is used to make the deities. That's what is the description that I've read and heard. Yes. When the souls come through rain and fall on this ground, doesn't the soil also have soul and is absorbed in the plants? That's what is the description. That's what is the description. So when that comes in the form of rain, then the soul gets into the grains, and when the grains is had now by the male, so that soul enters the semen of the male, and then that's how it goes ahead to get a body.